Maybe it's just because actually it's really good quality and I'm just not used to like having
it. You're not. We're in the podcast studio. So, hello, Reliability Gang. Welcome back to another episode of the Reliability Gang podcast. What a moment. We are in my new studio. Thank you for everyone on LinkedIn who's posted their lovely, kind comments on the music studio and the podcast studio. We're actually here, Will.
We are.
We're in here recording. It's amazing, isn't it?
We've been waiting to do this for so long. It's been, because obviously we've been going back and forth renting podcast spaces while Will was moving house. And so now that this has finally been done, this has been kind of one of those on the back burners. You've been just hustling to get it done in the sideline, haven't
you? Yeah, I know. The thing is, it's really difficult when you're so busy as a business, right? I was literally in here every other given hour just trying to get it done. Obviously my friend's a carpenter. I've got a plasterer friend. There are loads of people in the industry. I'm so lucky to know people, right? But within that, I'm still putting the insulation in. I'm still doing like 90% of the hard stuff and doing this in and around of having three kids, running this business. So for me, this is like almost when I built it, it was like an emotional moment of, oh my God, finally I've got this creative space that we can utilize and use, because we love doing the podcast. It's probably one of the most enjoyable parts of, you know, the business, is talking about successes and where we come and the journey and all these things. And it's really lovely to have a reference, because even sometimes I'll listen back to the first original podcast and I'll be like, oh my God, what a journey. Because you're talking about, oh, we now getting our first person on, and you know, you're talking about these challenges and you think, wow, what an amazing way to... to reference back to where we were and where we come from and what we've done. So, guys, we did say from the start of the year we wanted to try to get a podcast out every 2 weeks. Now that's achievable.
Now we've got this.
Now we've got this. Because the thing is as well, at the start, because January I was building this place pretty much and really getting it. Well, I was building it before then, if I'm honest. But it was getting to the last final stages. We've only managed to release one podcast this year. So from this point, we're going to now start picking them up. And we want to get you guys involved in some of the subjects. Because I think what we do is like to think, oh, that'll be good. That'll be good. We've got all these ideas. And I think me and Will talked about on a few occasions is putting some polls out to maybe we suggest the four things that we want to talk about, and then you guys every single week almost pick the subjects
We talked about as well, didn't we, how maybe creating some different series depending on what people like. There's obviously guys out there that are probably interested in how we're growing the business. And then we love talking about vibration analysis and condition monitoring. So I'd love to have that kind of where we can be like, right, we'll do a podcast all on gearbox analysis.
Yeah, definitely. Like yeah, there's different things as well, because obviously there's the challenges, the leadership side, there's the kind of that, you know, that type of positive kind of business-ship growth side, which a lot of people or startup businesses are loving. They're loving that part because they're kind of seeing, or they're entering in similar areas where we've already been. And then there's the other real kind of purist vibration analysis, reliability guys. And we love really going deep into them conversations, but that's probably not so applicable for the other business growth guys. So we have to think about ways of almost separating the content a little bit. Do you know what I mean? Because a lot of the time we are talking about probably a lot of these different subjects in one podcast as well. So there's a lot of applicable stuff as well.
I feel like this one in this episode is actually a little bit of a crossover in both of them, because we're touching on condition monitoring, but we're touching on also us and how we're trying to approach it with customers, and how if you're someone that's got maybe a business owner that has a factory, or you're someone senior within a business, how do you potentially look to sell condition monitoring? How do we look to do this? Because I think in the times now, the one thing that we've noticed a little bit of, which is the fact that, you know, right now, finances are not exactly easy. People are going through struggles, and that includes factories as well. And they're looking to save their costs, but where do they save their costs?
And that's the thing about trying to make the decisions about kind of, you know, and again, that can work two ways for us. I essentially think it's probably benefited us more than less, but that's only in the scenarios and situations where the people or the stakeholders of the business really truly understand what the value of doing reliability and condition-based maintenance is. You know, on the other hand, we've also had experiences where we've just about ready to start work on certain places, and because of the budget, they're almost saying, oh, no, we can't quite do this yet because we don't have the resource. And then again, I think that's kind of another discussion about, well, what is the cost of not doing this, guys, if that makes sense? And again, you know, very similar scenarios of people trying to save money, but then it's about, well, do we implement this course, or do we not? And do we actually risk not doing it? And I think today's podcast is almost like having insurance for your factory and your assets. and giving you that predetermined warning about the inevitable.
Yeah, because we talked about this analogy on the way home the other day. Me and Will have a lot of
chats,
phone call meetings, driving back from
places.
That's
another series, isn't it?
Yeah.
If we can somehow, in our Teslas, record ourselves, there's probably a way to do it. Elon, can you do that?
But
a podcast function in the Teslas, that'd be nice, wouldn't it?
It would be. But we had this chat about how, you know, the majority of factories, they have insurance, they've got vehicles that they use, pull cars, they've got insurance to protect them from major incidents and fires and things like that. And they do everything, and they have audits. They have people come in, don't they, to review, to make sure they're doing everything to make sure that it's the less likely they're going to have to claim on that insurance. But what protection do they have in place? What insurance do they have in place to make sure that they're going to not have an unexpected amount of downtime, to like have a catastrophic failure? Now, because I'm not an insurance expert, but I don't feel like their business insurance would cover necessarily. It might do, actually. It might cover a major failure, but if it's not going to cover your massive amounts of downtime. And the insurance premiums for those must be
phenomenal. Yeah, exactly. And if I was to say to you, right, and this is looking at it from more of a reliability perspective, if you could imagine someone comes in and says, like, right, you have to listen to everything I say, right, in terms of making every single one of your assets as reliable as possible. So precision maintenance, putting all these things in place and really making sure that every angle is covered in terms of the way that asset could fail. And you've got a robust way of doing, you know, condition-based maintenance, PM checks and all these different things. And you said, right, you have to do all of them things, right? And then you said, right, your insurance premium, for example, right, then would you then be in a position to be able to say, right, okay, I'm now comfortable, right, to run all of them assets for a certain period of time without any failing. And if something does happen, you guys have to fit the bill for it, right? But if we do our bit in terms of the reliability bit, like, again, you're always going to get this random failure element. We always get it. Like, it's very rare, but it does happen. You know, we've experienced one this week. Do you know what I mean? But most of the time, if you ensure that your assets are running in the most pristine condition, the likelihood of the failure reduces by a massive paramount effect. Mm. And the fact is, most plants that we're kind of currently involved with, even when there is condition-based maintenance being done, a lot of the assets that we're testing, we're finding problems and issues. And it's not necessarily to say, all right, there's a bearing defect there, you need to change, it's going to fail. It's more to do with, well, have you aligned it? No, probably we haven't really aligned it. We've never really had any alignment checks. Okay. Do you know, it's vibrating a little bit, you know, in terms of, is there soffit there potentially? Yeah. And all these little things that kind of are ignored it to a degree, because action's only really ever taken, isn't it, if the machine or asset's going to fail. And I think this is the thing as well. It's the overwhelming, like, degree of recommendations if we approach it in the sense of trying to get your plant reliable. There's a lot of things to rectify. And right now, people don't have the manpower resource to be able to do them things that are not necessarily going to hurt them tomorrow, but they will hurt them four, five, 10 years. Yeah. This is the question. I feel like we're in a real big crossroads within the industry right now, because a plant could be having a really good condition-based maintenance program and PPM program in place, and things may be getting identified really well, but it's the reaction time to actually getting them things completely rectified in a precision maintenance way to say, right, I know the asset is going to be running as optimum health. I would say there's a large percentage of assets that people are not confident that is the case.
No, because they're not going to do that. It's a balance of time and knowledge and awareness. And I think it's common for people to think, oh, we just don't have the time.
It's the biggest thing ever, because you hear it all the time.
Why don't you have the time? Oh, well, because we're ridiculously reactive. Okay, well, why are you ridiculously reactive? You're in this cycle, and you can break out of that reactive maintenance cycle.
Yeah.
But it's the idea of that, you know, like your car, if at home, you know, you make sure you put premium grade oil in it.
Of course you do. If you've got a nice sports car, you
look after it, you keep it clean.
It's like the paintwork as well, isn't it? Yeah. If you don't clean the paintwork of it and you get chips and, you know, you're going to,
you don't take it to Joe down the road for the service. You take it back to BMW.
You want the best service.
You want the best service. And you look after that because you want it to last as long as possible. But we know that random things happen. stuff comes out of the factory. You know that you might be driving down the road and you hit an icy spot. So you take out some sort of protection to protect that asset because it is a value to you.
Of course, it's very valuable, your car.
And this is the thing that businesses need to look at with condition monitoring and reliability. We've got a number of biogas sites we support, and one of their critical assets is a compressor. It's £20,000. It's the cost of a car, right? When you break down our rate and go into that site to collect the asset, it's probably about £6 an asset for us to ensure that we are identifying the problem before it catastrophically fails.
When you break that down there, it's quite scary.
So now, as long as we do all the steps, so have we got it precision aligned? Yeah, we're happy with that. Are we keeping it clean on a regular? Yeah, we're happy with that. Are we checking the grease regularly? Are we doing an oil sample on the compressor? Yeah, we're doing all that. We're doing everything we can to polish that BMW and whatnot.
And ensure that we know what is going to potentially be a problem, because even with like
it's
that,
the inevitable.
It's gonna happen. And I just don't understand sometimes how people can be so risk like orientated with their assets that are just so important to the whole process. It does beat me sometimes, you know. And you ask the question, and sometimes it's almost like denial. They don't even want to talk about it. It's because they're kind of on this pretense belief that it's never gonna happen to them. Yeah. But when it does happen, it's the most reactive, horrible environment to be working in ever, isn't it?
You often go to these to the sites and stuff, and you know, you might hear this at your site as well, where it's, you know, oh, we just don't have the budget for that. We don't have the budget. We had it recently with a customer. But
would you counsel that? And that's another thing, isn't it? So you're talking about your insurance for your car. If you would find the times were hard, would you say, well, do you know what? I mean, I know you legally have to have insurance in the UK, yeah, but pretend you didn't, for example, okay? Would you say, do you know what?
I'll risk that £20,000 car.
I ain't going to pay the insurance, that little premium every single month.
Yeah.
You know, I'll get rid of that because times are hard. You'd actually want to take more insurance out on all the other things,
yeah,
because you know it's going to happen.
Especially when you know it's going to happen.
Exactly.
Because with car insurance, this is the one difference between condition money. You don't know that anything's going to happen with the car.
It's like unpredictability.
I might have an accident, but I might not. I'm taking a risk. I'm taking a chance with condition monitoring and your assets. They are going to fail.
Yeah,
like they're going to have a problem at some point.
At some point, they will fail, because like 9 times out of 10, if you've got more than 100 assets on site, there's a very high probability and likelihood that not all of them have been installed in the correct
properly
way.
Designed
in the right way. The conditions and the environment they're in as well may be a little bit adverse to where they were, you know, designed for. There's a lot of different factors
but
that...
Going back onto the whole budget thing, you know, you know, when times are hard or people are reviewing budgets and seeing where they can make cost savings, you know, they might say, or even if we're presenting and doing a proposal to customers and they're like, you know, just, I don't feel like we've quite got the budget for that. Okay. And we had a customer recently we've been doing some work with, and we were struggling with the amount of assets to collect on site. We were like, look, we really probably need to add an additional day for us to give you the best coverage. And they're like, you know, we just don't have the budget for that. But then one of their assets had a problem and they were throwing money at it from every angle, because they were like, this happened unexpectedly. It was one of the assets that we weren't able to test within that time period, and we were trying to look to get it. And they were, and you're like, so you didn't have the budget then that could have protected you from this, but now you suddenly have it all available?
Well, to be honest, mate, the budget's not there. They're now taking money from a place where the budget didn't exist.
Yeah.
But this is the problem as well about assessing the budget and where that money's been utilised and sectioned off. Because essentially, you know, when it does come down to this, should that money come out of the budget?
And that's the question I was going to ask. Should something like condition monitoring, that is a protection piece, or, you know, reliability is a protection piece?
In my mind, the budget is more of an emergency fund. If anything happens, you've got this budget here to be able to ensure that the plant can run where it is. But if you get that bit right, your budget essentially can be lower, because you know you're not going to have the failures. Does that make sense?
Do you think, though, so like our services, we charge most customers on a monthly basis. We go in, we collect the data. If we look at it like insurance and things like that, and
a form of insurance, it's never ever going to be insurance. But I know what we're trying to say is
we're using an analogy.
It should be considered as a type of protection.
But it's a type of protection, right? So should that come out of the maintenance budget?
Probably not if it's a type of protection.
It's protecting the company as a whole. Because you look at reliability, right?
Well, reliability as well, to be fair. Should that really come out of the
budget?
That's
what I mean.
Should it?
Because reliability as a whole, right? We say it a lot. Reliability is the one metric that touches everything. You have poor reliability, you have a major failure, you've lost your reputation as a business. You can't produce the product.
Well, there's quality impact issues, in terms of the...
Everything.
It affects everything.
It's not just maintenance. So why does it only come out of the maintenance budget?
I don't know. This is the thing I've been trying to wrap my head around as well. Because the fact
maybe
is...
Maybe you guys know. Let us know.
Yeah.
Because we're still trying to work this out.
The thing is as well, I think, again, this is the important part of the reliability piece of trying to get everyone involved in this whole discussion and piece. And this is why we're raising awareness to it. Because, you know, I'm not going to lie, you've only just done our ARP.
Yep.
We're not pretending to be the world's best reliability engineers. No. We're learning, guys. We're on this journey and we're humble enough to say that we are learning. But I think one thing that me and Wood are really good at is asking the question of, hang on, if this is the case, why does the industry have a different type of way of working? And I think, do you know what? We're starting to uncover some real interesting things as well in terms about who's owning reliability and who should actually own it.
Yeah.
It shouldn't just be engineering. It should be
everyone.
The whole company, and it should be the shareholders should be really thinking how do we improve a lot of different areas with one philosophy? And that's where the reliability piece can shine, because when you really do go through the ARP framework and you look at all of the areas that are...
It touches everything.
And it's oh my God, the thing is, you kind of know it, but you don't. And when you go through that content, it's oh my God, this is
And when you list all those things out and you look at reliability and you say, okay, well, if my plant isn't reliable, I potentially have poor health and safety. If my plant isn't reliable, I can't produce the products. If my plant isn't reliable, I could damage my reputation. If my plant isn't reliable, when you list all these out and you look at it and you're like... And you realize how many aspects of the business it covers. And then you think, how many people are actually even measuring reliability?
I know. Because if you're not measuring it, how do you even know, A, where you're at with it, and B, how to improve it?
Yeah.
And that then we obviously did, Will was, again, Will's going to teach me this ARP actually in a few weeks, and I'm really excited to go. Because I've gone through some of the content, and he's shown me a lot of stuff. So I understand it quite well, but... Not the level.
It gives the theory behind it.
Yeah, the
That's
theory
what
behind
it
and the ideas. And I'm really interested in it because I want to indulge deep into it. But when you do start to learn about these concepts and these things, it really does open your eyes up to the fact that we are really behind.
Yeah.
We are.
Especially when you go and speak to the engineering team and you're talking to them about, they've just put a new motor in and, it's a cheaper brand and it's not very good quality in the install, and they're like, we're bound by procurement and they've told us that's the motor we've got to get. Well, this reliability thing is never going to improve until we get procurement on board and they understand that.
It's funny you say the procurement side, because I had a buyer, a contract that we just recently won, but I was on the phone to a buyer from a certain company, lovely chap, really, really lovely guy, and we was on the phone for a good hour and a half. And he was doing his job, essentially. Essentially the people that were providing their condition monitoring before were a lot cheaper, okay, a lot cheaper. Probably, ridiculously, to be honest, I don't even know how they were charging what they were. But he was asking the valid questions of,
why?
How come are they charging that and we're now having to go up to this, if that makes sense? And regardless of whether we're in a good ballpark figure or not, they're comparing it against a price or cost that they were regularly getting before, right? And we had a good chat about, reliability and all these other things. And I said, how come you weren't here in the original meeting when we presented all of that reliability study? So I weren't invited. And I was like, so now we're having our conversation.
And
so
he's making the decision.
Yeah. Well, essentially, he doesn't make the decision, but he has a big part of the decision. And he has to almost not scrutinize the cost, but try to get things as more value for the company, which is, exactly like we would do if we were trying to buy something or go into a supplier.
Where's the value this is?
Where's the value? How do we get a little bit more money off potentially? I mean, everyone is looking how to do that. But the fact he wasn't even a part of the first original reliability meeting meant I had to be on the phone to him for half an hour to discuss why we do what we do different. And then I said, okay, we're comparing cost here, right? But I said, that's just one element. What about value? And I was like, how long are the guys on site for? How many assets do they collect? how many recommendations have been made? What is the reporting format like? What's the communication like on site? I ask them all these questions about the value of the other part of the money. There's no point in paying for something if you're not getting anything for it. Yeah. And there's a percentage there of how much you pay and how much value you get out of it. You can answer any of the questions. So it's like, well, now you're just comparing apples with pears. You're not comparing the same metrics or values, because all you're doing is looking at one element, which is the price, and you're not looking what you get for that. And this is a massive problem that we are in the industry. And I spoke to him, and he was very open in the sense of saying, I should have been in that meeting. I said, you should have done. I said, the fact that you weren't in that meeting just proves that your only metric to look at is the cost. It's not looking at the value. Yeah. And if we just continually look at costs and not what we're getting for the exchange of that, then we're never, ever going to be in a position where we could advance forward as a whole UK industry.
And that is not just condition monitoring services. It's not. That comes to spares.
It's everything.
Everything.
It's everything. It's not even to do with just what we're doing. People are looking at the cost, not the value. And I think, of course, you have to look at cost. I'm not saying, oh, buy the Rolls Royce of mowers and like buy something that's stupidly. I'm not saying that. But there has to be the conversation and trade-off of understanding of, okay, how much am I paying and what am I getting foremost, and how is that going to make my plant reliable?
Yeah.
How is that going to give value in the area where its function is going to be used in my plant?
Yeah.
You know, whether that's service, whether that's, you know, equipment, whether that's parts, spares, whatever. And again, it was a very interesting conversation. It was, you know, it was a great chat, because essentially what he's trying to do is trying to get me to lower the price of the service. But what it did come, it was come more of a conversation of value, of like what we can do. Then it went on to like, well, if you can do that, what about these other areas? Can you cover them? I said, of course we can. We can cover all the areas. And so he's now starting to think, oh, actually, look at the value these guys can bring, rather now looking at the initial cost. And that's going to be our hardest battle all the time.
Yep.
Because things are going up. We've had to raise our prices. We've had to. We had no choice. If we didn't do that, we wouldn't be here. Simple as that. We are way too low.
Everyone's going.
Way too low. And it's difficult, because when you start as a one-man band and whatever, you want to help everyone. You do.
Yeah.
Like, I wanted to help everyone. But you can't help everyone. It's impossible. You can't, you know, like you can get to a certain stage, and this is why we've grown and we've just done studies. What was the percentage of growth from people in the last 2 years?
Well, the last year was 400.
430% we've grown. That's just people. And
it's about the same for sales as well.
Probably is, yeah. It's quite linear. But again, when you look at them metrics and figures, we are growing to serve this industry. That's what I want to do. The whole aim for Maintain was to do that.
And now we've had that. That growth was off the back of, you know, we did detect, solve, and prove. We looked at this model. Do we think this is effective? And oh my goodness, the numbers suggest it is. And now we're like, right, now we've got to really solidify the foundation so we can continue
definitely.
To support
and
more.
Now we've got this, we've had that growth. Now it's like, right, now let's have a look at every customer now. How can we really
take
ingrain
to the next level?
That philosophy of detect, solve, improve? How can we really ingrain that reliability philosophy of like have almost doing like a bit of a gap analysis? Where are you at now? Are we actually getting any better with the to that goal of reliability?
Are
we just staying stagnant? And we always need to, and it's quite easy sometimes to get in that if a customer's comfortable with the information that's coming and things are kind of going okay and good and that our information is really valuable, it's easy to get stuck in that rut and not have that extra push to the reliability piece, because there's another bit of investment that's required for that reliability piece. And I'm seeing a customer next week about that. We've kind of been in this limbo mode of doing really good condition monitoring, but not looking at all these other things we were talking about before in terms of reliability. And now we're going to have them these discussions. So now it's our job to be able to really focus on what we have and how do we make that better.
And it's about taking the reliability discussion part above engineering to other levels within the business.
Yeah, that's our challenge now, isn't it, Will?
That's the challenge.
Because we've never done that, essentially. We've always spoken to engineering managers. That's always our target audience, especially for the condition monitoring side.
Or reliability managers.
Or reliability managers as well. But even the reliability managers, there's still a lot of...
They've got their own battle to get procurement and the teams involved.
And that's the thing. That's why they generally want to help us to help, because we can create a bit of a framework to try to get the other guys and people in the business involved. But the businesses as a whole, I think from above, need to start taking this as a priority and start saying, right, your KPIs now need to marry into this reliability stuff, right? They're not saying that they have to completely change, but there's got to be a few metrics within each department that allow us to measure or communicate with that reliability study, which has to be in the center, not coming from engineering. Unfortunately, right now, the reliability push is coming all the way from engineering.
Yeah.
It needs to be pulled all the way into the middle and everyone needs to feed into it. That's the problem. That's the struggle.
It's almost as though, and we see it with bigger companies, less so with small ones. And I think it might just be the journey that these companies are going on where, and I would imagine, you know, in the next few years, the smaller companies are going to take over and they are going to start bringing this in place. But you see it in the big companies, they have their own reliability teams. They have their own reliability leads. You know, you have in a big company, you know, director of procurement, director of sales. Should we have in these companies, you know, director
probably,
of reliability?
You're right.
And with the reliability team underneath it, maybe that is supporting. And
I agree.
Their role is, are we buying the right stuff? Can I get the procurement guys in? Are we doing, we need that drive from the top down. And it talks about it loads in ARP. You know, the drive has to be top down and bottom up.
Yeah.
It can't be one direction.
It can't, because you need everyone on board with it. It's such a, the thing is, when this is done correctly, oh my God, the transformation is phenomenal. But I just think a lot of places are pushing in one direction and the other guys are not on board. And there's a level of awareness. It's not easy to implement this. It's really not, because it just requires so much integration from every angle, from different departments, and everyone needs to understand it. And not everyone understands it. There's a level of awareness that we, as you know, maintain reliability, have a cause as well to be able to kind of teach the industry a little bit in terms of, and we don't even know it all yet. Do you know what I mean? We're kind of just doing this as we go within our journey in terms of these. But these discussions are really valid, because what it does, it allows us to be able to take the ARP information and actually correlate it to real life scenarios and our experience of what we've experienced with a lot. We've got a lot of customers now. You know, I looked at the customer list of our of where we are now, and it's like, oh my God. We are serving a lot of customers, and originally there was a small part of them customers that me and Will like really understood. We are so ingrained in their processes, but now as we're growing,
right, how do we maintain? We're
kind of not involved with them customers so much anymore. The guys are, and then it's down to us to now kind of implement the things above to be able, just like the reliability study of it coming down from the top below.
Yep.
But then the guys there need to do the same. They need to come from the bottom and up, and they have to understand and reach the same metrics. And that's not easy as well when you're almost trying to, you know, a lot of the skills that we're giving the guys are condition monitoring skills, essentially, because that's still a very large amount of business comes from vibration analysis. It does. It's a massive high percentage for us anyway, because, again, it's still a very important thing to do on most sites. But when we're trying to now transition to the detect, solve, improve model, we're now trying to, it's hard to evolve too quickly into them areas, because what essentially each one of them areas could be is a business model that's even bigger than the one we have already. Because without actually having and growing these other business models, we can never get to that part of reliability. We can't. Because essentially, we're just going to detect. We're just going to identify problems. But where's the other part of the map that prevents this from happening?
I think we still do a little bit of the reliability stuff, because everyone that goes to site is still always asking those questions. You know, has this been laser aligned? This is loose. Is this a good design?
But I think that's kind of down to the way that a lot of our engineers have been brought up.
Yeah.
They're always trying to do things the right way. And I think they've been taught well in that sense, definitely. That's an ingrained philosophy inside of them. But that's more to do with a mechanical understanding of machinery. But where they don't have that knowledge yet, essentially, when we do the ARP stuff, is asking, why are we doing what we're doing? Why are we testing these assets? Yeah. Like, well, what's the value here? Well, like, what about these assets? Why are we not testing them? And when they start asking them questions, the answer to that would be the reliability stuff of understanding the criticalities and all the other things around it as well. Yeah. So we've got a lot of work to do. We have got a lot of work to do in that sense. But as well, a lot of the time when we're trying to talk to our customers as well about doing the CM, and we're like, guys, we've got a blanket approach here. Do you know what I mean? We're then trying to understand that as well. So,
yeah, definitely.
Anyway, guys, it's been a great discussion.
That was a good one. I enjoyed that.
Thank you for tuning in to the new studio and all of this. Any feedback, guys, let us know. We're going to be running some polls as well about the next podcast and discussions that we've got. And yeah, you guys let us know what you want to hear. But thank you guys for tuning in.